This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
Got the number one pick and a Super Bowl champ with the man that can't seem to stump. Do something dumb, that's an observation. CLT make him need to run.
That's Lawrence Taylor!
I don't marry trash, DMT for short. Wonder if we best, why don't you peep the score? Sports Center Reed, gonna be top stories of the morning. While you're yawning, grab your coffee, rise and shine with 98.7. This is Drive Time, we provide highlights from your favorite teams. Dave, Chris, and Rick making plenty of picks. It's Rule 76.
And welcome, May the 24th, 2021. The show is, of course, DCR, leading you till 8 o'clock and KJZ this morning. I thought this morning was going to be kind of a coronation of the Knicks are back, and the Garden was as good as you've heard it in God knows how long, and they got a win, and all of it happened except the win. We'll get into it a lot today. Let's say good morning to the guys. Good morning, Chris Canty.
Good morning, Dave. Hope you guys are doing well. Rough sports weekend for me with my Lakers, but I'll take the Yankees sweep over the White Sox. So, I mean, I guess you got to look at it glass half full, but that had to be a tough loss for you guys to digest last night. That was a heartbreaker.
Heartbreaker. Good morning, Rick.
What did I tell you, Dave? We were going to need the couple days off. We were going to need it. Good thing we got a couple days to relax now after that. Because you're right. I mean, listen, the Knicks are back. They're in the playoffs. The Garden was crazy.
Oh, so good.
Was so good. And, I mean, you got into a game where right till the very end, you had a chance to win it. Trae Young makes a floater, and he's one of the best in the NBA at doing it. And, you know, we sit here now, down a game, lose home court, but I don't think all is lost by any means.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just, here's how I take it. I'm just disappointed that happened. Because I thought they had a great opportunity to win that game. Even without your best player playing well, because he was bad last night, you still had a golden opportunity to win that game, and it got away late stages, and I feel a way about it. I'm upset about the Knicks' loss from last night. I'm not going to lie.
Well, Dave, the Knicks did exactly what we thought they had to do, right, which is slow the pace of that game down to a screeching halt. I mean, the first quarter score, I want to say it was 24-16, and through three quarters, it was 73-71. The Knicks taking a two-point lead into the fourth quarter. So from a pace standpoint, that's exactly what you were looking for. And you guys already touched on it, but Julius Randle did not have his A game. I think the Hawks did some creative things defensively, throwing some double teams at him, some different looks at him, and you know, kind of forcing other guys to beat you. And to the Knicks' credit, I mean, they found guys on that bench that were able to step up and contribute. Like what you got from Emmanuel Quickly and Obi Toppin, there's not a Knicks fan out there that can say that they expected those guys to contribute the way that they did, especially in that second quarter. So, I mean, you did have that pleasant surprise, but the bench, like it's been all year long, it was a weapon for that Knicks team, and we thought that that could be the difference in them being able to beat out the Hawks in this series. It's just you need your starters to come to the party, and you know, when Julius Randle doesn't play well, it's tough for that group to get going.
Well, I think the bench can be a difference. I mean, the bench was great. I mean, you had, you know, 64 points from your bench. Alec Burks was easily your best player.
My unsung hero.
No, unsung, yeah. I mean,
that's right.
Again, but he's the same guy that down the stretch was the one that was closing out games, right? So, I mean, a great pick by you. He was the unsung hero. He was awesome, especially in the fourth quarter. I mean, 18 points is crazy good, but I mean, the problem when you get into situations like this is you need in these moments for your best players to be your best players. And unfortunately for the Knicks last night, when Atlanta, especially down the stretch, needed their best player to be his best, Trae Young was, and Julius Randle was not. And someone needs to answer me the question, why the final possession, your best player, your hottest shooter, is the one that's inbounding the basketball?
Yeah. I don't understand. There were a couple things that puzzled me in the game last night. And, of course, the phone lines, especially after a game like that, 800-919-3776, wide open all morning long. I understand that you look at Ntilikina as this elite defensive player, but I don't think it's fair to anyone, him, the team, anybody. You're going to put him in for like eight-second stretches at a time to just shut down Trae Young, where I don't think he can do it to begin with.
No, I didn't think that was fair to him in that moment. I mean, you're sitting on the bench all game. He had no burn the entire game. And I understand why you did it. And, of course, I mean, Trae Young turns him into a pretzel, gets to his right, and makes his floater, which is, I mean, that's kind of what Trae Young does. But, I mean, it's something the Knicks going to have to figure out Because, I mean, Derrick Rose, you saw how quickly he got into that game last night. Like, Elfrid Payton at this point is...
He was terrible. Say,
unplayable.
Yeah.
He's unplayable.
But what do you do? Nothing.
I mean, a quick hook. I mean, that's the thing, though. But Derrick Rose can't defend Trae Young. Derrick Rose cannot defend Trae Young.
He can't defend Trae Young, and you can't play him this many minutes every single game. You just can't.
Well, I think they got to get Ntilikina involved earlier in the games. I don't know if that means they start Ntilikina, but they got to figure out something because Elfrid Payton is just not enough in terms of a threat offensively in order to merit playing him significant minutes. So I think that you got to get Frank involved somehow, some way earlier in that game. And I think he is a good defender. And to your point, Rick, I think it was a really tough spot that Tibbs put him in at the end of that game. But at the same time, like, he had help. Taj Gibson was coming to double Trae Young. You just can't let him beat you to his right, your left. Like, that was your one job. You can't let him do that. You had help in the middle of the court. You got to force him to go to his offhand. And the fact that he didn't do that in that situation, like, that's tough to give him a pass on that one. Because you're talking about a game-deciding situation. But that being said, I just think from the jump, even with that last sequence, it was just some tough breaks for the Knicks, man. I mean, you're a Bogdanovich corner three away from being able to win that game. I mean, think about it if R.J. Barrett comes up with that loose ball. Or if they don't call that foul on R.J. Barrett when Trae Young goes for that little bank shot. Like, I mean, those sequences could have completely changed this final stretch of that game. And the fact that those plays didn't go your way, it's a tough break. And that's what leads me to believe that, I mean, this Knicks team, they still have a really good chance of being able to win this series, even though they gave away home court advantage. The sky is not falling by any stretch of the imagination.
But that's the difference, though, what you just said. It's because it's on their home floor. And I think everyone realizes how closely contested this series is going to be. So to give away the first one on the home floor is what kills you right now. I mean, had this been the exact same result and this series starts up in Atlanta, you're not blinking twice.
No, you just lost home court that you worked so hard down the stretch to get.
So hard. And I mean, there are a couple different things, too. I mean, at the end of the third quarter, I mean, you're an R.J. Barrett three away from taking a 10-point lead. Then all of a sudden you blink.
Then you're up two.
Atlanta has that 2-for-1, and Tony Snell
buries
that three.
Yeah, Lemon Pepper starts cooking. Randall with a bad turnover, and all of a sudden now you only got a 2-point lead. So I mean, there are a bunch of different things you can point to. I mean, losing Nerlens Noel down the stretch, that hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of a sudden Trae Young's getting the free throw line at 10. He didn't get his first free throw till 6:43 left in the game.
And now he's going there every other possession.
Yeah, now he's got 9 free throws down the stretch. Come on, man. I mean, you're calling the game a certain way. Finish the game that way. Reggie Bullock didn't make a three last night.
He was not good last night.
He was not good.
Nope.
And he's one of your better defenders.
It looked like at the beginning of that game that the moment was too big for him. I'm not saying it will be for the entire series, but like first playoff game, that it looked it last night for the Knicks.
But I told you this on Friday. This is the one detriment. I used to have these conversations with Alan all the time when we do the show about home court, home field. And I said for a team that lacks experience, starting off at home is sometimes to your detriment. Because especially in a building like that, when you go from nothing, right, to all of a sudden you had some, you got a taste of it, to now 15,000, the way MSG was, like emotionally, that's not easy to deal with. And I thought you saw that in the first quarter of that game last night. Offensively, they were terrible. The Knicks were terrible in the first quarter.
I mean, threes were hitting the backboard. Terrible. They were offensively challenged last night in the first quarter.
It was a struggle. I mean, even look at the Nets. Look what the Nets did in the first quarter of that game.
Mm-hmm.
The Nets struggled offensively, too. Yeah. I mean, that's a real thing.
But they got it going in the third quarter.
Yeah,
though.
I don't think you have to worry about the Nets.
Yeah, the big three decided to turn it on.
They will be fine. All right, let's hear from the different players. Let's hear from Tom Thibodeau and Julius Randle and R.J. Barrett discussing his first ever and their first playoff game at home in years and years and years. Here is R.J. Barrett on his first MSG playoff experience.
Yeah, man, it's crazy. Every single possession matters. Everything. You got to give it your all the time. A lot of fun. Played hard. I know I played my ass off. And like I said, long series ago. So going to need the fans. Going to need, the energy. And we'll bounce back.
Well, the one thing I can tell you not to worry about is the energy of the fans. You're going to have that every single minute that they're on the floor. That was some dunk from him last night, huh?
Yeah, it was a great dunk.
Yeah, huge momentum swing in that third quarter. And I thought that was something that they could kind of ride. But, I mean, again, the Hawks, that's a feisty bunch, man. They just didn't go away. And the end of that third quarter kept the Knicks from being able to build a lead that I feel like could have caused the Hawks some problems once we got in the fourth. I mean, if you push that to an 8-point lead or a 10-point lead, I think you're talking about a completely different ball game. But the fact that they were able to have that 2-for-1 at the end of the third, I mean, that changes things. You go into the fourth quarter only being down a bucket with Trae Young, I mean, who was playing like the best player on the court yesterday. I mean, that's going to be tough. And one of the biggest questions that we had coming into this series were how the Knicks were going to handle Trae Young with pick and roll, especially in, you know, game-deciding situations. And the Knicks were committed to fighting through the screens, going over the top, and Trae Young was able to get downhill as a result and become a playmaker, whether it was him finishing at the rim or him kicking it out to guys on the corners. And the Knicks really didn't have an answer for that. And it showed at the end of that game. So I think that Tibbs and those guys are going to have to go back to the lab and figure out what the best approach is in terms of trying to slow that down, because you're only going to see more of that from Nate McMillan and the Hawks. They're only going to continue to stay with that pick and roll. I don't know that they could do it any more than they did it yesterday, but they've got to have an answer for that by Wednesday when they tip off game two.
Someone in that starting five has to step up too. It has to. I mean, you had Capella shadowing Randall. I mean, they're throwing doubles at him, you know, and especially in those moments, sometimes he doesn't make the best decisions, especially if he doesn't trust the guys he's passing the ball to. But, I mean, when your starters combine for, I mean, it's
41 points?
No, they had 16 points in the first half. I mean, that can't happen. Like, I know R.J. Barrett said he played his ass off, and he did, and there was that one stretch you talk about where he hits the three, and then he has that, you know, he has the dunk, and then you had that, you know, couple offensive rebounds, he gets the tip in. Like, all that stuff is great. But still, I mean, you can't keep doing this, like, where I'm going to have a really slow start and all of a sudden I'll kind of come back to life in the second half. Like, everyone needs to, from the opening tip, have their best. And last night the Knicks did not.
Yep. It is still a best of seven, and here's Derrick Rose telling us, don't worry, this is a long series, a big best of seven here.
It's not a one-game elimination. We're not planning a play-in game or anything like that. It's the best of four in a seven-game series. So they won the first one. They came in and did what they were supposed to do. We got to win this next one and go back there. Take every game, one game at a time. Don't look ahead. Just stay focused.
You better win on Wednesday. Because if they lose the game on Wednesday, you're going to hear a despondent Rothenberg on Thursday morning. So they better win this game on Wednesday night.
No, they have to. Well, yeah, better. They have to. If you want this to be a series, they have to. They can't lose game two, because then all of a sudden you go to Atlanta. I mean, even if you split in Atlanta, you're still coming home down 3-1.
You're down 3-1, and you have to win three in a row? No. You cannot afford to. Listen, could you afford to lose game one? You don't love it. You don't love the way it happened. I think you could afford it. You cannot afford to lose game two.
I wouldn't be surprised to see more quickly, too, in game two, because it didn't look like the moment fazed him at all.
Mm-mm.
At all.
You know what I'm worried about with quickly, though, Rico, is them playing him without Derrick Rose on the court. Like that I just feel like there's a certain comfort level with IQ when he has D Rose on the court with him. Like they just do a great job of playing off each other, complimenting one another, and I don't know if I would want to split that up. You know what I'm saying? Like I know that you're probably gonna have to get some minutes from IQ without Rose being on the court. But to me, I just feel like there's a calming force with Derrick Rose on the court with that second unit, and that just frees those guys up to be at their best. And that's what we saw in that second quarter. I mean, the Knicks bench scored 28 of the 34 points in that second quarter. I mean, they got them back in the game. Like, to me, like, that's a huge weapon. I mean, they accounted for 65 points last night. Like, I mean, that's something that I think the Knicks are going to be able to hang their hat on. And so that's why I'm looking at it through an optimistic lens, because I see the formula for this Knicks team to be able to win games, and they weren't far off last night. They really weren't. Again, if they can play at that kind of tempo, that favors the Knicks. I mean, Julius Randle's just got to be better. He's going to have to knock down some of those looks that he had last night.
Well, which he usually does. I mean, we've seen it the entire year. When he has a game where he struggles, it seems like the next game he bounces back and has a big night, right? So let's kind of pencil him in for having offensively a big night. What concerns me the most, though, is that all we talked about is, you know, Knicks having all this time off. It's like Belichick having this time, or Andy Reid after a bye, that Thibs is going to get in the lab and he's going to have this game plan to shut down Trae Young. And there was a couple things that he shut down. I mean, Trae Young had what? He took three threes the entire game, barely got to the free throw line.
Yeah, because they were fighting through those picks. They weren't going to go under those and allow Trae Young to have good looks at the basket from deep. They weren't going to do that.
Which maybe they have to consider, because I mean, once he got in the paint, it was night-night.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was
oh,
night-night. Yeah. So, I mean, if you couldn't come up with a plan with all that time off, how confident you are that all of a sudden now, over a couple days, that's going to change?
Well, I mean, it's a two-point ball game. And Julius Randle had 15 points, where he was averaging 37 against the Hawks in their three games this year. So, I think you can point to that and say, if that one thing changes, then the outcome of that game probably changes. Now, I'm not saying that you don't have some tweaks in terms of how you're going to attack Trae Young, Rico. I think you're absolutely right. And I think some of that includes just denying him the ball, like just not letting him get the ball, especially in those end-of-quarter, end-of-half type of situations. Like, I wonder what would have happened last night if they just pull Alec Burks off the inbounds and just don't let Trae Young get the ball. I don't know. I mean, you can play the hypothetical game, but I think that Tibbs will have some things, some curveballs to kind of throw at the Hawks offense to try to throw them off a little bit. But, I mean, I think the biggest thing is Julius Randle being able to get going in that starting lineup, being able to give you more production on the offensive side of the court. If that happens, then I don't know that you have to make any major adjustments to your defense.
Yeah, he's got to be better. He has to be better moving forward on the offensive end. He was bad. You could argue, really, that was the worst game you've seen the entire season from Julius Randle.
I don't think it's an argument.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you.
That was the worst version of Julius Randle, so hopefully he's better moving forward.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts. This is DCR.
And now Young with it in the front court. 5 seconds against Neely Keena. Going right. 2 seconds. Gets free. The runner. It's good. Over front rim with 0.9 to go.
It just felt like everybody got quiet. I was excited.
He's a great player. Obviously, we have to do a better job.
Julius Randle did not have his A game.
I'm not making no excuses. I got to be better.
Down to game. Lose home court. But I don't think all is lost by any means.
It happened. Give credit to them. Young hit a tough shot at the end of the game, man, but we fought hard.
I thought they played well enough to win this game. I can feel upset and heartbroken at the loss. I'm still optimistic about the remainder of the series.
This is DCR on 98.7 ESPN.
Flying down 10, nearly 2 a.m.
All right, the big 6 o'clock hour, DCR with you, 98.7 ESPN. Time now for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Obviously, the Knicks are the topic of the day. They fall in Game 1 at the Garden, and we didn't really spend a lot of time on this. How great was it? It almost feels like yesterday was the day that sports returned. You have Phil Mickelson with this wonderful event at the PGA down in South Carolina, and you have just this electric feeling at the Garden with the Knicks last night. That was legitimate sports moments yesterday.
Yeah, I think this weekend in general, though. I mean, just when you look at some of the crowds in these playoff hockey games, and then you saw what happened yesterday with, I mean, how the crowd reacted to Phil coming up 18. I mean, you heard him after the thing, too. He's like, that was awesome. Little unnerving, but it was... Yeah. I mean, it was awesome, right? I mean, it was a sea of people, and then you turn the TV on at night, and you got the Garden the way the Garden was, and you see some of the footage outside of the Garden, you know, how amped up the fans were. I mean, it's starting to feel like we're getting closer and closer to getting back to some semblance of normalcy, but, I mean, really all we needed was for the Knicks to pull that one off.
That's it.
That's it.
That's all you needed, man, because if the Knicks won that one, I mean, it's just... It would have been unbelievable. Like, it would have capped off a great sports weekend. Not a good sports weekend, a great sports weekend. And I feel for the Knicks fans, man, because you were right there. That game was that close. And it just felt like the Knicks have found themselves on the winning side of so many of those games throughout the course of the regular season. And for them to drop game one in the playoffs after the team hadn't been in a playoff game, hosted a playoff game in 8 years, like that's a little bit tough to process.
You know what's interesting, though, Dave? I mean, coming in from that first hour with you saying the Knicks played well enough to win.
They did.
I don't necessarily know if I agree with that. The bench played really, really good. The starters did not play well enough to win that game. Oh, they did not.
That's fair. But the bench was sensational. And if Bogdanovich doesn't hit that three with under a minute to go, the Knicks are going to win that basketball game last night.
Listen. You're not wrong, but in saying that, I mean, a reason why I would be optimistic as a Knicks fan today is because Julius Randle had his worst game as
yes.
a Knick.
He was awful this year as a Knick. He was awful,
yes.
And you still certainly could have won that basketball game.
Correct.
If I would have said to you, Julius Randle is going to be almost unplayable. I mean, he shot horrendously last night. It was the worst game he's given you the entire season. What was he, 6 of 23 from the floor?
Mm-hmm.
two of what, six from three? He was bad. And you would be up with under a minute to go in the game, I don't think you would have believed me. If I told you Randall was brutal, 15 points on 6 of 23 shooting, and the starters combined for 41 points, you would have said the Knicks would have lost that game by 20 points last night.
Yes, that's exactly what you would say. But luckily for the Knicks last night, Alec Burks on the bench was really, really good. And they bailed out the starters. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough. Trae Young down the stretch, you know, all of a sudden getting to the free throw line, he goes... You put Frank in, and again, I know why Frank's in. I mean, he's in there to defend because that's what he's good at doing, but to take him off the bench cold and say, okay, go stop Trae Young, I think that's easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
And give Trae Young credit. I mean, he got to a spot, hit a floater, which he does better than most in the NBA, and unfortunately now we're sitting here down one at home. That's what makes this so depressing is that it's all we did was spend all this time talking about how important it was for the Knicks to get that four seed because of home court advantage.
And also because of the matchup, too.
Right.
Like, you wanted a chance against the Hawks because you didn't like your chances against, you know, if it was the Bucks or if it ended up being the Brooklyn Nets. So, I mean, the fact that you got the matchup that you were looking for, an actual team that you feel like the Knicks are on par with, like, it just felt like with home court advantage mixed into that equation, like, there was a real chance that the Knicks could move past this first round series and get to the second round. And think about that. Like, what would that say about the program if you were able to not only get to the playoffs, which would be ahead of schedule, but being able to win a playoff series? Now, all of a sudden, you're not talking about the Knicks being that far off from being a contender. I mean, that's how a lot of fans would feel about it. So, I mean, it's a deflating loss, no doubt about it. But that just means that this game on Wednesday, that you can slap the must-win label on that game.
Must-win.
You can go ahead and do that. They have to win this game. If they don't win that game, then they're going to be out of this series.
I got to be honest, though. I'm not overly deflated with that loss. I'm not. I would have felt way worse. I mean, if Julius Randle was lights out and, you know, all of a sudden they lose that game, like where when the Knicks played great and they lost, I would probably be despondent. Like, I'd be like, oh, my God, they came.
Yeah, even, if he had even one when of his, they like, play 39-point games, it was just sensational and hitting all the shots, yeah, you'd be horrified.
You're right, Rico. I mean, it shouldn't be a deflating loss. But, you know, the fans that were watching yesterday and the 15,000 that were in MSG, like, it's been a long time since they've been able to go to a home playoff game. And for it to be that closely contested and find yourself on a losing end, like, it's a little bit of your heart sinking on that one. You got to admit that.
No, listen, I'm not, again, I told you, this series is going to take years off your life. And it was good that you're going to play on Sunday, have a couple days to recuperate, and then get back at it on Wednesday. Because this is going to be that, you know, that back and forth, that much of a roller coaster. I think the one thing that most of the people that call in will point to as to why they're disappointed is anyone you heard, I mean, Chris picked the Knicks in six, Dave and I, you know, picked the Knicks in seven, Stephen A's got the Knicks in seven, but anyone that picked the Knicks pointed to the fact that this is going to be such a close series, but because they have home court is why the Knicks will win the series. So all of a sudden to lose that in game one, it sucks.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say is you're not going into Philadelphia. You're not going to Boston. Atlanta is not exactly a home court advantage where it's daunting. They could easily win at least one game down in Atlanta in the series.
No, you're not wrong. But again, I mean, just when you go into any series, the expectation is you take care of your business at home. Like in a series, they always say, doesn't start until the home team loses.
And now it started.
And it started. They've already done it.
It started quickly this series. Here is Derrick Rose saying, we know that Julius is going to bounce back in game two of this series.
Oh, we're very confident. We know what type of player he is. Like he's a hard worker. It's up to us to tell him certain things, how they're just playing them, how they're forcing them certain ways on different sides. And yeah, he's just got to read the game. I mean, you look at this is his first time in the playoffs. He loves the game. He's a student of the game. So when we look at film, he'll be able to figure it out. That's the great thing about it.
Yeah, I don't worry about Julius Randle. I think it was just first Knicks playoff game and, you know, a lot of energy. And the moment was huge. And I think he'll be fine moving forward. And if he's not, then you're going to have a very short series. Anyway, let's go to Darwin in the Bronx. I feel like he's very smart. Darwin, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
So I just wanted to say that I felt there was a video circulated on social media of Spike Lee hitting Julius Randle during warm-ups. And I looked at Julius Randle's eyes, and right away I said, man, this guy's a little freaked out right now. And every time he touched the ball, I felt nervous, and I was just like, yo, just give it to D-Rose. Let him run the offense, because the offense just looked a lot smoother with D-Rose handling the ball.
Yeah, but Darwin, you can't get away from what you've done the entire season. Right? Like, the offense, for the most part, especially with the starting five, has run through Julius Randle, and he's trying to get himself going. The look in your eyes, the look in his eyes, what you saw was, there's a lot of pressure, man, and this is his first time playing in the postseason. And when you got, Celebrity Row and Spike Lee and the place is jam-packed and they're chanting MVP, I mean, that's a lot to handle.
A lot on your
shoulders. I think that's the thing, though, Rico. He's the guy. Like, it's not like this is his first foray into the playoffs and he's a role player and he's a compliment to whatever other stars you got on the team. Like, everybody in that locker room is looking at him to be the best player on the court when they get on, when the ball tips off. And that clearly wasn't the case. Like, I mean, you brought up, you know, my experience in the postseason and being with the Giants when we went on that run in 2011. And I will say this, I was nervous as hell, but the thing that kind of calmed me down was the fact that, you know, I was a role player and I had other stars around me that had been there and that had done that. Like, it's a different animal when we start talking about going into the postseason and not having any experience, and you have to be that dude. And so I think we got to give Julius Randle a little bit of grace. And he admitted it. He put more on himself than he probably should have leading up to this game. And sometimes having that long break, having that long layoff can be your worst enemy in terms of you getting in your own head. So I would certainly look to Julius Randle to settle down on Wednesday night in game two and to play his type of game. And if he does that, then I feel like the Knicks have a really good chance of being able to even this thing up before they go to Atlanta.
Well, you have to. I mean, all those things have to happen, Chris. He has to play really well, and you have to win. Because if he doesn't play well, you're not going to win. You're down 2-0, and this series and the season is on the verge of being done.
Here's the thing, though, too. You hate to waste an effort like that from Alec Burks. Right? Like, when one of your guys steps up the way he stepped up, because he's good. Like, Alec Burks is good. And, I mean, we've seen during the season he's capable of having nights like this. But going game one where he has 18 points in the fourth quarter, like, he had a special night. Like, how many more times during this series is that going to happen?
Probably none.
But Reggie Bullock is going to be a lot better.
Yeah, Bullock's exactly going to be better, yeah. And Randall's going to be better, and Barrett's going to be better. So you're right. I mean, Rose was really good, and Burks was really good. But I have to imagine that the rest of the guys are going to be much, much better in Game 2 on Wednesday.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
And you know me, guys. I don't know much at all about golf, and I have very little interest. I was watching golf yesterday. I was locked in with Phil Mickelson. That was great.
You'll probably have a golf show next week.
Listen, why do you have to go there?
What? Sunday golf show.
Anita already has a golf show on the station.
It's a betting show. It's not a golf. It's a betting show. Every show she does is a betting show.
She likes gambling.
She does, and she's got like 72
plays. She might have an issue, right?
She was like, I was 14-7 yesterday with my plays. I was like,
14-7?
A lot of plays.
Yeah,
I think she said she was 14-7.
14-7.
Oh, yeah. Breaking down, no. NFL week one games.
I heard the tail end of the golf show yesterday morning. She was going through all the machinations of what she loved this guy to finish top 20 and this guy to finish top 10, and you could get that at plus money. And she enjoys the gambling a lot.
Yeah, I think so. I read somewhere yesterday that somebody put $1,000 bet on Phil to win.
And he won $300,000.
$300,000.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Apparently the sports books took a bath with Phil Mickelson winning.
But see, that's the thing, though, because everyone loves him. You saw how the fans reacted to him. He's like, I mean, he's like the current day Arnold Palmer. Like, he's the people's champ. People love him. Is that you'll always have those people that just, they'll just throw some money down on Phil because they want to see it happen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
That's why you bet on it, because you want to see it happen. The guy's going to be 51 years old.
It's amazing. First of all, he looks better than he has in a long time.
And I'm glad he finally found a shirt that actually fits. He doesn't have the Smedium on anymore, which was nice.
Well, he can actually fit in it. I think it's still a Smedium, but he's not fat anymore, so he can actually like fit into the Smedium.
Oh, okay.
But come on, how great is that story? He's the oldest to ever win a major.
No, it's an amazing story.
And the fact that he was able to do it on that course, though, Rico, I mean, that is not an easy course, especially when the wind is howling like it was yesterday. Like, that was unbelievable to see Phil be able to do what he did.
I mean, what you just said is the conversation my wife and I had pretty much the entire final round. It's like when you go tee by tee, it's like, where are you supposed to, like, visually, like, where are you supposed to hit this ball? Like, everything looks, there's trouble everywhere. It's windy, there's water, there's marsh, there's sand all over the place.
It's not supposed to be a Lynx course, but it kind of played like a Lynx course yesterday. You know what I'm saying, Rico?
Dude, it was, like, mentally, the grind of that course was, I mean, then, you know, Koepka couldn't make a putt. You got Phil hits one.
He was terrible yesterday, huh?
Yeah, he was, but he's, I mean, his knee's all, like, he shouldn't even be playing with how bad his knee is right now. Like, he's only playing in majors. He wasn't, I mean, how about him in the sea of people? Like, you can barely see Phil, and then, like, where did Koepka go? He's gone.
I don't think he was too pleased with that either.
No, he was not at all. He was not at all. Koepka's one of those guys, though, for some reason, man, he's a really good player. I don't like him very much. He's very unlikable to me.
I don't think you're alone there. But you know what? Who is likable? And that's Mickelson. And I'm telling you, I felt great about him winning this thing yesterday for so many reasons. First of all, I've always liked him. Second of all, he's 50 years old.
Yeah, we get it. I mean, he hasn't won a major. This is his first major in, I mean, since 2013.
Did you see the picture of the oldest guy? Not the old, like the second oldest prior to Mickelson winning a major. And then they called him like Old Man Radbourne or something. And he looked like he was 97. He had this beard and was all gray. I mean, Mickelson doesn't look like he's that old.
Well, no. Remember when we had when Brady won the Super Bowl? And they showed Brady at his age and what George Blanda looked like at his age.
He looked like death.
He looked like he was 70 years old. But this is, give credit again, this is, and maybe this is going to become more the norm than it has ever been. And he talked after the tournament about how much he's learned from Tom Brady and how much he respects Tom Brady. That, you know, you put in the work, you focus on, you know, your diet, and, you know, fills into this, the coffee and all these different things that they do now, the visualization, the meditation, that these guys are, I mean, extending their careers way past anyone would have ever thought possible. That's the amazing part, though, in all these sports. What Brady's doing in the NFL right now. Yep. Mickelson will be 51 next month.
LeBron.
Yep.
Tennis with Federer. I mean, Serena. Like, it's just the prime. Like, for athletes to be able to hold on to this level.
But it's not even holding on, Orico. They are still dominating.
Extending it. Like, they're keeping their wind. Like, usually your window of like peak performance is finite. Like, there was never before, like, we can extend this thing out all the way through, you know, into our 40s. That what's scary about that, though, is, and Chris and I talk about this all the time as an athlete, that's like when you get to a point where LeBron's at or Tom Brady's at. I'm sure you saw, like Phil actually said going into the tournament, one of the reasons why he's having a hard time, you know, playing and winning is because he can't keep his level of focus up long enough. Like, he has a hard time, you know, mentally being engaged.
Yep.
So you saw him a lot, like, and I think that's why he had the sunglasses on now, is that he, you know, closes his eyes, takes deep breaths, kind of visualizes and kind of like slows down the moment to stay locked in. But it's like, as an athlete, what you always strive for is to get to a point where the game is so slow because you've seen everything that you can physically do it at the same time. Like, usually when you get to that point where the game's slow is like, okay, it's slow and you tell your body to do something, but athletically you don't have it anymore. Like, it's just like utopia that these older athletes are in right now.
But he had that perfect combination this weekend. And I'm interested to see what the ratings are going to be, because I would never have tuned it on. I would never have turned this thing on if he wasn't involved in the final round, ever.
I think you're with a lot of people. But that's kind of where golf's at. Like, golf has a ton of really good young players. Like, Koepka's a really good player. Dustin Johnson.
Morikawa,
who we had on the show, Dave. Remember that?
I really liked him when we talked to him.
Yeah, everyone. Like, you got a lot of guys that people like. Like, DeChambeau is polarizing, right? Like, Reed is polarizing. There's a lot of really good golfers, but there's no one like, you saw that again yesterday, there's no one like Mickelson and Tiger Woods.
Tiger and Phil continue to move the needle. By the way, and this is big news, the K Show, later today, they're giving away Game 2 tickets to the Knicks and the Hawks.
Wow.
A must win at the Garden for the Knicks. Let's go to Derek in Brooklyn. Derek, good morning. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, fellas. Good morning. Long-time listener, first-time caller. And I just found it weird that, you know, you guys are talking so smack about the Nets all week. The Nets probably winning. I don't got nothing to say. Not only they came back.
Does he not hear me? Derek.
No, he's not listening.
Derek, what smack did we talk about the Nets?
You guys were saying, I agree. The James Harden commercial was terrible. I agree. But you guys were saying, they can't even sell out.
It was the fact.
But it's clear. The Knicks have been the same story all year, man. You take them to the end of the game. If the game is close, they're not going to win it. Julius Randle's going to hit a shot that's not going to go in. It's always the same thing.
Dick.
So let's talk about the team that matters. The real Big 15. Like, let's talk about that.
Dick.
Have we ever said anything to the contrary, that the Nets aren't a great team?
Never. Not one time.
I mean, my God.
I mean, you've been steadfast the entire season. The Knicks, it's an inevitability that the Nets end up in the NBA Finals.
I don't see any way from seeing them in the NBA Finals. And I'm sorry. Well, the Knicks game last night was a lot more relevant than the game one of the Nets and the Celtics on Saturday.
It was. And I want respect.
Well, one game you didn't know what the result was going to be. The other one you did.
Right.
Like we knew that the Nets were going to beat the Celtics. The Celtics are shorthanded. They don't have Jaylen Brown. Like we knew that team wasn't going to be capable of beating a Brooklyn Nets when all three of the big three are playing. When those guys are all on the court, like it's a wrap. So it's not like there was a lot of drama in that. I mean, with the Knicks, I mean, down to the last shot, that game was really entertaining. So, I mean, it's from just a strictly entertainment value standpoint, yeah, the Knicks were more entertaining last night than the Nets were on Saturday. There's no question about it. Now, nobody was talking trash about the Nets.
No.
We just know what the result of the first round series against the Celtics is going to be.
Same thing after game two. They're going to beat the Celtics game two, and we'll talk about it a little bit, but we're not going to spend 3 hours on the Nets. When they play Milwaukee and they play the Sixers, you'll get a lot more Nets conversation than you will now. Is that fair?
The only interesting thing about the Nets-Celtics series is whether or not the Nets are going to be able to sweep them and get the big three some rest. That's it. That's it. It's either going to be
smack,
over in four
but it
or
wasn't
five.
Even, calls like that pissed me off, though, because it wasn't smack. I mean, he just said it. The James Harden commercial was ridiculous. That was the fact of the matter. The Knicks, the second the tickets went on sale, 15,000 sold out immediately. You didn't have Julius Randle offering to pay half your ticket
prices, right. So
you could sell the place out.
I'll buy your tickets for you. You couldn't get into the Garden last night for under $300.
No, and I mean, again, it's almost like, here's the thing, Nets fans, all six of you listening, the Nets are so good that it's not really like round one against the Celtics where Brad Stevens, the head coach of the Celtics, doesn't really believe the Celtics can win anyway either. It's like, it's not that interesting. It feels like a foregone conclusion that they're going to win the series.
Because they are. Because they are.
So relax.
That's the truth of the matter. My God.
What's up, Nets fans? It's James Harden. For a limited time, I'll cover half of your tickets. We got to get Barclays Center rocking. All right, go get your tickets now. Use the code Harden. You dig?
The urgency in James Harden's voice.
Hurry.
Go get your tickets now. You dig?
Guests on DCR PRV,
so
the Goodyear Hotline. And DCR presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com and do it.
Whose idea was that, you think?
Oh, man, I don't know.
Not his, I'll tell you that.
But that's a fail by the PR department. That's a bad look.
James, do us a favor here.
Yeah, that was one of those ones.
We'll just do one take. Whatever the one take is, we'll that's all we're looking for. Just the one take and buy their tickets, would you?
That wasn't well thought out.
Not at all.
That was not well thought out.
Yeah.
Really bad. You know what is well thought out, though, Rick? Very well thought out.
Oh, so, yeah, come on. Candy?
Yeah, because our team needs it.
Chris, just do me a favor, because I got a tweet about this the other day.
What's up?
Just set the record straight. Who came up with the Candy Canty segment?
Candy Canty started on Han, Humpty, and Canty.
Thank you.
That's where it started.
Thank you.
Yeah, so Canty Canty started there, not on New York Game Day with Anita
Yes,
Mark.
My man.
Now, Anita fully embraced it, though.
Everybody embraces it.
Now, of course, Anita, in true Anita Marks fashion, threw a gambling element into Canty Canty.
No.
Yeah,
no.
But she fully embraced it on Sundays on her morning show. So,
What is the over-under questions we get to today in honor of Anita? How many, you think?
I think we get to, I'm going to say the over-under is set at 3.5, and I think we go over.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Let's go. Kenny Canty.
It's everyone's favorite. Can he or can't he?
Thank you, Captain Obvious.
Ah, yes, on Monday. Nice to be back with you all. And thanks for having me. So,
We'll start this here in the true honor of trying to get to as many questions and see what that over-under lines up as. Little trivia to start. If you're watching MSG, then you'll know this. Since starters for lineups for track starting in 1970, RJ Barrett is the youngest Nick to start a playoff game. Who is second youngest? And we'll get to that here in a couple minutes.
Cool. That's a beautiful
That was a Cadillac trivia question, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Saw that.
They did a nice job. Nice to hear Breen calling a playoff game for the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Talked a lot about Trae Young. Here's a little audio that we haven't played yet. This is from Trae Young, who was on the Hawks' social media in the hallway after the game. He was not being asked a question. He was just reacting right after the shot he hit to win the game.
It got real quiet in there. It's still yelling now. I don't care. Next one. Next one.
He really seems like he's going to be the guy that everyone hates for a long time after this. But Trae Young, 32 points, 10 assists, 7 rebounds, 9 for 9 at the stripe. Can you confidently tell me right now the Knicks have a player that can slow down Trae Young?
No, I can't confidently say that they have a player to slow down Trae Young, but I do think they can do some different things. I think Frank Ntilikina has to be a part of the equation, and I think they got to change up the way they play the pick and roll. Like, I understand they want to fight through it and not let him have, you know, clear looks at the basket from deep, but they're going to have to change it up because you can't let Trae Young keep getting downhill on your team. So, no, I can't confidently say they got a guy that they can throw out there that's going to stop Trae Young. No, I can't.
Yeah, I think the word is confidently. No, I cannot confidently say they have someone that can keep Trae Young out of the paint. But they have to find a way because he got to the paint whenever he wanted yesterday.
Yeah, I would love to buck this trend, but I can't. They don't have that guy. That guy does not exist for them. And I don't think they have to slow him down. I just think they have to. Some of their players, big-time players, have to be better moving forward.
Well, but here's the thing, though. I think they probably do. Like, I think that Frank could do it. But now, how do you... That's another guy that offensively doesn't do anything for you.
Do you try to throw Alec Burks at him a little bit?
Maybe RJ Bull. I mean, maybe Reggie Bullock. He looked like, I mean, he's big enough, he's physical enough, where he may be able to do it, but it's just because they're, I mean, when Atlanta's going to score, right? And, like, if you all of a sudden now focus, like, on trying to slow down Trae Young with the defense, like, where are you going to get the score? It affects how you score now, too.
That's right. And you don't score well to begin with.
Yes.
Scoring, indeed, important to winning games. Ideally more than the other team. You guys just touched on the Nets. They lead the Celtics 1-0 in what I think we can all assume is just like a post-regular season, pre-real playoffs warm-up for them. Big three look good in the second half. You guys talked about it. Can you call the Nets title favorites? I like to check in on this every once in a while with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would call the Nets title favorites, especially after what I saw in the Western Conference playoffs this weekend, because the two teams that I think are capable of beating the Nets in the NBA Finals dropped their first game in the first round, that being the Clippers and the Lakers. So, yeah, I would call the Nets the favorites to win the NBA title right now. I don't see anybody slowing them down in the East, and the two teams that I think could do it that would be in the Western Conference both look shaky.
I don't even think this is a question. They are clearly the favorites. So yes, you can call them the favorites to win the championship because they are the favorites. If you go to Vegas, you go online, that's who the favorite team is. They're the healthiest of these three right now. I think they have the easiest road. The Lakers have a tough road. Really, you look at what the Lakers would have to do to get to the NBA Finals, it's really, really rough. So without hesitation, yes, they absolutely can get to the Finals and win the whole thing.
I'd like to disagree, but I can't. I concur. Let's move on.
Yep.
There's a troubling trend developing. I don't really have any reaction to this, but I just want to play you some audio just to reinforce what we can't let happen to Dave.
Not only they came back, they were talking bad about the crowd.
Derek,
sold out.
Here.
We came back.
Derek.
We obviously about to be Boston.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, troubling. It's troubling. Again.
I don't understand. Have you ever been on a phone call and like the other person, you don't let them respond? Why does that happen on the radio?
That happened last week, too.
What happened with Omar when I couldn't interrupt them?
It's a tough trend. I don't know what we do. I guess keep letting it happen.
Yeah, it's great. Good
it's like those poor people trying to do security at the PGA Championship yesterday.
Lakers lose game one to the Suns. Big headline going into the game. We haven't touched on this yet, though. LeBron being able to play in the game. He went to a promotional event for a tequila, I guess, that he backs, and in the process broke NBA safety protocol. I don't think any of us were really expecting the NBA to sideline LeBron, but he was asked about it.
So LeBron, what was your reaction to the NBA saying that you violated the health and safety protocols? What's your perspective and explanation on all that?
I'll be ready for game two.
So, I guess the question is, could you say LeBron should have been allowed to play? But I think it would have been an even bigger story had the NBA stepped in and said, ah, you know what? LeBron's out game one.
But, man, there's no way the NBA was going to make LeBron sit out game one. No shot. You heard his reaction to it. It's like, why would I sit out because of health and safety protocols? He probably wrote the damn protocols. Like, I mean, listen, I understand that we still want to be safe and we're in the middle of a pandemic, but with restrictions relaxing, with more fans coming to the buildings, coaches can now take off their masks. Like this was going to be a situation where the NBA wasn't going to take the marquee player, the face of the league, and sit him down for game one because he went to a promotional event the week prior. Like, there's no shot that that was going to happen. So, yeah, I'm going to say we can say that LeBron should have been allowed to play.
He should be allowed to play. We will never live in a world where LeBron James is punished. They need him too much, so they can and they should and they will, and it's a non-story.
Yeah, but I mean, the question, I mean, they acknowledge that he broke protocols. So by definition, yeah, he should have been. Like, if this was just another player that broke health and safety protocols,
if this is Dennis Schroeder, he's not playing.
If it's Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, he's
not playing. This was, we're going to acknowledge it, but the realization is we can't do anything because it's LeBron.
It happened, you're LeBron, we need you desperately, you will play.
But what if you're the NBA and you know you're going to let him play, then why even announce it?
Because there was pitchers, that's it. Only because there was pitchers. We realize everyone saw it. So
we have to address it.
We'll address it, but again, we have no teeth with this rule because it's LeBron James, so he will play.
All right, and I know you guys listen to the station a lot. If you do, you know that Dave has a Saturday morning show that he does solo.
You know what? You're such a bad guy. You really are.
So if you were listening, coming back from break, Dave minding
his own... This is nothing bad, by the way.
Minding his own business, and this is what you heard on Saturday.
All right, DCR with you. Now, oh, man, you know what? Time.
Yes.
So, can you tell me you're worried about Dave since he no longer can differentiate days of the week, apparently?
Yeah, I'm worried about Dave. I'm worried about Dave Rothenberg.
What's on a cookie?
He doesn't know which way is up right now. The guy's doing his solo show, and we know he looks forward to the solo show. Like, his entire week, that's the culmination of it. Like, that's the pinnacle, him doing the show by himself. Because he doesn't listen to Rick or I. But, I mean, yeah, the fact that he doesn't know what day it is and he's doing the DCR intro for his own show, a little concerning.
Let's get one thing straight. I'm not concerned about Dave. He's a professional. Here's what's happening with the Saturday show because I listen to most of it. What it's slowly morphing into, and eventually this is what it'll be, Stump Rothenberg for the entirety of the show.
That's not true.
What do you mean? It went from Stump Rothenberg where we ask you questions. Now you go to break, and then you restart it with where did this guy go to college?
We've had this for years at this point.
It's almost a full hour now of Stump Rothenberg.
It's two segments of Stump Rothenberg. That's what it is. That's what it's always been. If you paid attention to the show, you would know that that's what we do.
It's creeping up where it's going to be all Stump Rothenberg.
Maybe that'll be the name of the show, Stump Rothenberg on Saturdays. trivia answer time. So the question, since starters retract in 1970, R.J. Barrett, the youngest Nick to start a playoff game, who is second youngest? Any guesses?
Ooh.
Only reason I know the answer is because I watched it on MSG last
night.
Answer
then. Yeah, what do you got?
I mean, it's Amon Shumpert.
It is Amon Shumpert. 21 years and 307 days, 2012 against the Heat. And that is Kenny Canty on a Monday.
Oh, very, very well done. Thanks for really dragging me under the bus as well.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts. This is DCR.
And now Young with it in the front court. 5 seconds against Neely Keena. Going right. 2 seconds. Gets free. The runner. It's good. Over front rim with 0.9 to go.
It got real quiet in there.
It's still yelling now. I don't care. Next one.
It happened. You credited him. Young hit a tough shot.
It's a deflating loss, no doubt about it.
Great player. Obviously, we have to do a better job.
This game on Wednesday, you can slap the must-win label on that game.
Must-win.
You can go ahead and do that. If they don't win that game, then they're going to be out of this series.
This is DCR on 98.7 ESPN.
All right, the big 7 o'clock hour, DCR 98.7 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. And all guests on the show appear to be the Goodyear Hotline. So one game into the postseason, one loss for the Knicks, and now Wednesday, after a couple days off, game 2 at the Garden is now a must-win game. The crowd was sensational at the Garden. It was one of the great Garden crowds I've ever heard. Was it with the Knicks? I mean, they looked almost overwhelmed to start that game, Rick. It looked like the moment was and the way that the crowd reacted, almost too big for them to start that game one of the playoffs.
Yeah, but I said this on Friday. Sometimes with a team that lacks postseason experience, I mean, playing the first game at home, especially with, you know, a week off leading into the game, I mean, everything going into it, the fact that, I mean, it's been 8 years, the place is going to be sold out, 15,000 screaming fans, that, yeah, I mean, it's nerves, anxiety. It may take a second, and you saw that in the first quarter. I mean, offensively, they were bad in the first quarter, and Julius Randle never got it going, really. Started off slow, stayed slow.
And, Rico, to your point, I don't think it's any coincidence that the second unit with experienced guys like Derrick Rose and Tops gives him perform much better than the first unit. I mean, you saw how comfortable quickly and Toppin looked with that second unit. Burks had a huge night, 27 points. Like, those guys playing with veterans that have been in the playoffs and done it at a high level, I think that makes a difference. And you just didn't quite have that same kind of poise with your starters. So you're hoping that, you know, because they were able to have game one under their belt, that they'll come out in game two and be much better. They'll be more prepared for what it's going to feel like, the kind of energy that's going to be in the building. And they can just go out there and relax and play basketball. Because that's ultimately what it comes down to, like being able to play your game, play your style. And I thought that second unit, you know, was more of what we're accustomed to seeing for the Knicks. You know, that bench being a weapon. It's just the first unit's got to get it together, especially on the offensive end.
Well, the bench was the only reason that game was close.
That's right.
I mean, that was really the only reason. I mean, for Julius to be as bad as he was, you know, Bullock wasn't good. He didn't make a three. RJ had a bad first half. I mean, Alfred Payton, I mean, it took him 4 minutes to get put back on the bench, and Derrick Rose to be out there. I mean, they were lucky to be in it down to the last possession. Now, was it a game they could have won because Alec Burks played great and Rose was good and everything else? Yeah, it was. But there were a couple plays. I mean, that bogged down, laziest name in the history of names, three was a huge three.
That
where you defended
me.
Trae Young perfectly. He's on
crushed
the baseline.
Me.
Yeah, I mean, it crushed you. Crushed everybody. Looks like R.J. Barrett could have stole it. Turns into a three. And Alec Burks, as good as he was, had the 18 points, has a really good look. Would have gave you a two-point lead. And then, you know, unfortunately, and again, I get the mindset. But again, like, at a certain point, like, knowing the situation, the fact the guy hasn't played the entire game, how important this possession was, to all of a sudden now go to Frank to be the one, okay, now you're going to – now do us a favor. Since no one's been able to do it the entire game, let's have you that hasn't played. Let's do me a favor on the most important possession of the game. You shut down Trae Young for us. That's a tough spot for Frank
to be. It's a brutal spot. I wonder if you start to play him a little bit more, because I don't know how much you can play Alfred Payton. And you can't play Derrick Rose upwards of 40 minutes every single night in the postseason. You can't.
Well, offensively, you know, when you're having Payton versus Ntilikina conversation, they're both awash. Like, they're not good offensive players. Although I think of late I have a little more confidence in Frank being able to knock down outside shots than I do Alfred Payton. But, I mean, defensively, you're hoping that Ntilikina's length is going to give Trae Young some problems. Like, Ntilikina is known for being a defensive specialist, and if he gets those minutes where he can get into the flow of the game and get a feel for Trae Young's style, maybe he can do a little bit of a better job of neutralizing him, especially with some of the actions that the Hawks use him in on the offensive end. That would have to be the hope. To me, I don't know the downside in taking that chance and playing Frank more minutes and not playing Payton at all. I don't know why Tibbs wouldn't look to do that in game two. I don't know what there is to be lost by making that adjustment.
Can't
I really
be worse,
don't.
Right? I mean, it's not like you're going to watch Ntilikina and pine for Alfred Payton. Not going to be worse. So
no.
I'm fine rolling the dice with that. And if it doesn't work, which it might not, maybe you go back to the drawing board then.
No, I'm with you on that. Yeah, you try to find another answer for it. But to something that Rick said earlier, there aren't going to be a whole lot of great answers when it comes to dealing with a great player like Trae Young. Like, Trae Young is going
special
to be
player.
He's going to be a perennial all-star. Like, he's a really good player, and he plays the most important position on the court, which is the point guard spot. Like, it's akin to being a quarterback in the National Football League. Like, he tees up everybody else. And he's the catalyst for that Atlanta Hawks offense. So it's going to be really, really tough to just shut him down. But I do think there are some things they can do to slow him down. They can beat him up. They can try to expose him on the defensive end, which I don't think they did enough of. Like, Reggie Bullock is just camped out in the corner, and it's just like, I think you have to try to force Trae Young to work on both sides of the court in order to take some steam out of him, because if you let him get downhill off of that pick and roll and he's got a full head of steam, it's going to be next to impossible to stop.
Let's go to some of the calls. Let's go to Brian and Wayne. Brian, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Morning, gentlemen. Glad to be at the game yesterday. Not really happy to see some of the fans. I mean, I'm getting it. We're all pumped and live, but once your saliva touches my forearm, it's over. I'm not enjoying it anymore. Anyways, a couple points. One, I think it's time for Frank to start. Alfred, I mean, I backed him up all season, but right now he's just not getting it done. And you can't expect Frank to come in to guard Trae and not have him just come in fresh. You got to give him more minutes before you really expect him to get good.
Yeah, but Brian, let me ask you guys. Let me ask you a question. I'll let you finish your point. Let me ask you a question. In theory, that sounds fine. You bring Frank in, but isn't the goal to early on in the game, and it was something they struggled with yesterday, was trying to find a way to get Julius Randle going because he's your most important player. Now, who's handling the basketball? Tell me who's handling, like, with Frank Ntilikina starting at that position. Who's handling him? That's my problem.
Well, Frank will do it, but then that gets Julius also involved, because you know that Alfred usually would hold it a bit longer. But this way, you're not messing the rotations of Rose, which you can't give him so many because you see how Trae blows right by him. Could it be age? I guess. And then you don't interfere with how you have quickly with Obi and that lineup there. So I think it's just something where you got to get him to just keep going. And you're going to get more touches with Randle in the beginning because Frank is not going to be moving the ball as much early on.
Yeah, but what do you think is going to happen, though? If all of a sudden Frank, who, I mean, have you seen him try to penetrate a defense? It's not possible. He doesn't do it. Like, you saw how much attention they paid to Julius Randle yesterday. Like, now all of a sudden Frank's on the floor starting. Like, what do you think is going to happen to Julius Randle? That's the problem. That's the issue that they run into, is that you're going to sacrifice one for the other.
That's right.
Yeah, you'd like to slow down Trae Young with your defense, but that now all of a sudden takes away from your offense.
Well, maybe Frank being on the court helps a little bit with spacing. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because Alfred Payton is not a threat to be able to score from the perimeter. He's just not.
But Frank's not really either, though.
Well, Frank is a lot better the last month and a half of the season than Alfred Payton has
been. But I think Atlanta would settle for that.
No, but make Ntilikina make shots. But that's my whole point, though, Dave. I think that even if you decide to make the swap for Payton and Frank Ntilikina, I don't think you're gaining anything or losing anything by starting Frank over Alfred Payton offensively. I don't think that's the case. Like, I don't think Alfred Payton is this dynamic guy that's going to be able to break down the defense and create opportunities for Julius Randle. If he was, then Tibbs would have stayed with him a little bit longer yesterday. That didn't happen. So offensively, both of them are going to be a wash. But defensively, I think there's more upside with playing Ntilikina. That's why I think it's worth the risk.
I think they have to find a way to incorporate him more. I just think if you're Tibbs and you're in a tough spot, because your best option is Derrick Rose, but how much can you play? You know what I mean? How much can you play Derrick Rose consistently? Like, defensively, he can't stay with Trae Young. He can't.
I'm not messing with that second unit. That second unit scored
exactly
65
right.
points yesterday. I'm not messing with that.
You're not wrong. And Quickly was really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't look overwhelmed at all. Toppin
played well.
Had the big dunk in the three. So those guys didn't look overwhelmed. But, I mean, you now get stuck in this weird situation where, you know, I need my starters to get going, but do I want to take away from my bench? Because my bench is a real threat right now. Like, that could be.
I think it's fair to say that if the conversation is Alfred Payton or Frank Ntilikina, you have major problems at the point guard position.
He speaks French because he's from France.
Well, I think we know that. That's why playoff basketball is so much different. Like, we had so many people call and say, oh, yeah, you know, the Knicks, you know, 3-0 against Atlanta. We'd be disappointed if they lost the series. And we kept saying, take a step back for a second. It's a really talented team. Most important position in basketball. They got Trae Young. We don't. This team's a different team with Nate McMillan. And people are like, nah, we don't want to hear it. Like, everyone, the Knicks were so good this regular season because even with a limited amount of talent, they showed up every night and played hard. When a lot of teams in the NBA don't show up every night and play hard.
Now everyone's going to show up every night and play hard.
Which all of a sudden now puts a spotlight on the talent deficiency. Like if you've got talent that's working really hard, it's not that's tough to overcome. Like, you know, they always say like hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard.
That's right. But all the talent works hard in the postseason. They're not going to give that away. Anthony in Holbrook. Good morning, Anthony. You're on 98.7.
How you boys doing this morning?
We're doing good, Tone. What's up?
Nothing, man. I just wanted to talk, and I don't want you guys to take this the wrong way, like I'm complaining about him, because he's been absolutely exceptional all season. But we got to call a spade here. Tibbs was awful yesterday, man. His rotations were off. His defensive scheming was terrible. Trae Young was getting to wherever he wanted, whenever he wanted. There's no reason why the last play of the game, the guy who scored 18 points in the fourth quarter is inbounding the ball. And the play he draws up is just a flash to the high post to Randle. There's no reason why Derrick Rose isn't inbounding that ball and you're trying to get Alec Burks a look. It's just he was terrible. He got outcoached by Nate McMillan so bad. There's no reason why you're not blitzing the pick and roll. There's no reason why on the defensive end you're not putting Trae Young in the pick and roll every play. You're just leaving Trae Young to hide in the corner defensively, and he's staying in rhythm offensively. You got to bump him on screens. You got to do all these little things that kind of to try to throw him off. Because he was, like I said, I'm not complaining because he's been amazing all year. He's a great coach, but he definitely got out-coached last night, and he was bad. So hopefully, you know, it picks up. Obviously, Julius has to play better also, but Tibbs has to be better too.
Yeah, I think at a certain point, though, Anthony, I mean, your players got to go out there and perform too. I mean, I don't care what the game plan is, and I understand what you're saying. It's still, I mean, I said it to start the show. I don't understand why your best player is inbounding the ball for the last shot. Like Julius Randle, I know he's your, I mean, he's your best. He's been your best player. He was not your best player yesterday.
He was not. You want to try to get the ball in Burks' hands for a shot, and you had a second to do it. I mean, it's not unfathomable that he could have gotten an open look.
No, it's not. I mean, if you would have, after watching that entire game, and you got less than a second, the three of us, if you could pick one person to take that last shot, who was it going to be?
Burks. Alex Burks.
Yep. Exactly right.
Especially if you know that the Hawks are going to double team Julius Randle in that scenario. Like Julius Randle got all the attention from the Hawks. So, I mean, if he wasn't good, it just makes sense to go to somebody else that had the hot hand. But,
yeah, but why have one of your shooters? Why have one of your best shooters? There's no time. Like, you're not going to pass that in.
You could put anybody inbound the ball.
But that's what I mean.
It can't just be anybody. You got to make sure that you have a good pass to inbound the ball, Dave. Because you don't have a whole lot of time to create a shot.
It was a terrible pass.
It wasn't even a good pass.
No,
it was an awful pass.
I understand that. But he's trying to force the ball to a guy that's being triple teamed. So, I mean, that's what led to a bad pass. But my point is, you're right. Alec Burks should not been inbounding the ball. But you can't just have anybody inbounding that pass.
No, but here's the point, though. You're right, because you have to be a good passer.
Yeah.
But why take your best shooter away as an option, which allows you now to put as many people as you want on Julie? Like,
I agree with you.
Give me the four best shooters, so now you got to make a decision.
Yep, I agree with you.
Like, I mean, I don't know, man. That made no sense to me. The Frank thing didn't really make much sense to me either, just in that situation, having not played. But
they were they were planning on double-teaming Trae Young, though. Frank just can't let him go to his right. Like, that's the other part about the whole Ntilikina thing. Like, Taj Gibson was stepping up to double him on Trae Young's left. All Frank has to do is make sure that Trae Young goes away from his dominant hand. You cannot let Trae Young go to his right, your left. That's the only job that you have if you're Frank Ntilikina. And he let him do it.
Couldn't get it done.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.